Heather McCoy Show.
And welcome to the Heather McCoy Show. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Later on in the show, we'll talk to houseless people who have been surviving the recent cold spell that has hit Portland this week. But first, we're all joined by Aaron Brown from the activist group No More Freeways, PDX. They are opposed to the new I-5 corridor freeway expansion plan that is proposed by the Oregon Department of Transportation. Welcome to the show, Aaron.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. First, describe the totality of the proposed I-5 corridor expansion through the Rose Corridor.
Sure. So this is a $500 million freeway expansion that would add 1.8 miles of lanes of freeway between through the Rose Corridor on Interstate 5. So between the Fremont Bridge, where you're taking it over to go to the west side, down past the Rose Garden, the Moda Center, to I-84. And this project for $500 million has been in the pipelines for the last couple years, decades, honestly. And our coalition is a group of environmentalists, community folks, parents at the local Harriet Tubman Middle School, and neighborhood transportation advocates in particular that are all coming together to say that this is a lot of money to spend on a project that is not going to serve the needs of our community.
Yeah. According to the ODOT documents, the freeway expansion is trying to re-engineer an outdated intersection design between the I-5, I-84, and the I-405. It's an area which they say is one of the highest areas of crash rates in the state of Oregon, and it will add a shoulder for disabled cars to pull over to the side. What's your response to the claims of the project?
So back in 2015, the city of Portland passed a Vision Zero initiative aiming to move to eliminate traffic fatalities in its entirety by 2025. That means having a data-driven approach to actually looking at what types of infrastructure is actually killing people and creating casualties. It turns out that this stretch of freeway has not had a single fatality in over a decade. ODOT has been talking up about traffic safety, and admittedly, there are plenty of fender benders when, you know, cars are stopping and people aren't quite paying attention. And there's a lot of on-ramps and off-ramps that are going through this space. If you were meaningfully interested in addressing traffic safety, though, why is it that ODOT has $500 million? We're talking $500 million to spend on this stretch of freeway that hasn't had a fatality in over a decade, when ODOT also owns streets like 82nd Avenue, Barber Boulevard, and Powell, and some of these other places in outer East Portland, where we are routinely seeing traffic fatalities, particularly pedestrians, and it's particularly, you know, vulnerable people that are just trying to catch a bus walking across the street.
Yeah.
On a rainy or cold day, slipping on the ice and worried about crossing five lanes of division. If we're really meaningfully talking about traffic safety, it's really unfortunate to see that ODOT has billions to spend on freeway expansions around the region, but we can't find the money for basic crosswalks in lower income neighborhoods.
Would you support the parts of the project where, like, they're trying to make it more pedestrian friendly, where they cap some of the freeway overpasses and have more pedestrian areas and have better bike connectivity? Or is that the part of the part of the project you can support, or is it just the whole thing is just rotten?
Well, I think that anyone that's spent time as a pedestrian walking through the Rose Garden, the Rose Quarter area, would agree that a lot of it is rotten in the first place.
Okay.
And there are some really meaningful, bold, inspiring ideas about what we could do to that neighborhood. In particular, there's a group called the Albina Vision that's talking about, you know, building a bunch of affordable housing throughout the area, really with a restorative justice lens of building more housing, particularly for low-income and African-American communities that were displaced when the freeway was built back in the 60s and the hospital and the stadium. However, the plans that ODOT currently has involves pretty much turning all of those streets into large on-ramps and off-ramps. Like, I'll say that the, you know, Bike Loud, the Community Cycling Center, Oregon Walks have all come out in opposition to this project. The Pedestrian Advisory Committee has been working on their letter detailing their concerns. Many of the surface improvements that are really just ODOT putting some green lipstick on this project that ultimately is, in the end of the day, a freeway widening through the Albina neighborhood.
You mentioned affordable housing in the area. There is a real estate aspect to this as well. According to the Portland Mercury, now quoting from it, another element of the project has the city's Bureau of Planning and Sustainability salivating. Once it improves the I-5 corridor, the state is pledging to lift congestion standards near the freeway, which will allow for denser standards near the highway, which will allow for denser development in the Rose Quarter, end quote. Is this a Trojan horse, this project, for more luxury apartments that no one seems to be able to afford?
Well, what I will say is it's best to really understand that a lot of our municipal and state governments are often in a very friendly, outwardly but inwardly cold war between different projects, right? So I'm of the perspective that, yes, we desperately need more affordable housing, and part of that is just building a lot more housing. So there are places, say, in the Pearl District where some of these new buildings are going up, and ODOT is threatening to rescind their ability to build these buildings close to the freeways because, in theory, all those new buildings create congestion that will spill into the on-ramps and off-ramps onto the freeways below. So it's sort of the statewide preemption that allows ODOT to tell local communities where they can and can't build development. Now, if you're someone like myself that's interested in building a lot more housing, building communities that people are much more able to take transit, walk and bike, instead of having to own an automobile and spend all of that money on car ownership, insurance, gas, when you get in a crash, cars immediately depreciate the day you buy them as opposed to other major investments. You know, you buy a house, it appreciates over time. You spend $10,000, $5,000 on a car, it immediately drops in half in value, right?
I owned a PT Cruiser.
Right?
Yes.
Right on. You're styling around town.
Yes. The key operative word was owned. It died.
May it rest in peace.
Yes. Continue, though.
To your point, there's absolutely a necessity to be thinking about affordable housing. And, you know, this neighborhood, with its proximity to all the major transit lines close to downtown, should be a space that we're thinking about building abundant housing at all sorts of different income levels. And this project in particular does not, like the Albina Vision, for instance, is talking about capping the freeway and putting large, some market rate and some affordable housing on top of it. This, the caps that ODOT is proposing don't actually, will not be strong enough to support buildings. So you're essentially going to have this very large dead space between like the 3 and 4 lane Broadway, Widener, Vancouver, Williams, that will be very unpleasant to walk or bike by because, you know, do people enjoy walking up MLK right down the street from KBU, like when there's multiple lanes of traffic rushing by? Like, there are other ways to invest in our communities that involve not allocating so much space for the private automobiles, which is imperative if we're going to do anything about climate change.
You mentioned about the restricting the Pearl District and their ability to build down there because of congestion, but that's the area where I bike in the most. I mean, it has a lot of public transportation options. It has the little streetcars. It's got the MAX if you walk down to that. Like when you have denser neighborhoods, you don't automatically have to have a car. Like, how do they come to those engineering conclusions?
It's vestigial state laws. I mean, if you think about, like, this is ODOT being able to exert its like I said, these government agencies sort of exist in this Cold War, and here in the city of Portland, and Metro and Multnomah County, you've got government agencies that tend to be a little bit more friendly and encouraging of building these walkable, bikeable communities. And ODOT as a statewide entity that is by and large interested in the moving of freight and private automobiles as the priority over anything else related to building walkable communities, thinking about public health, thinking about climate change, thinking about environmental justice or equity. ODOT is able to say, that has been part of the peace offering. It's part of this ongoing package. So the funding for this Rose Quarter Freeway was allocated with the House Bill 2017, the big transportation package that Governor Brown signed in 2017. And it included many good things. There's a lot of money that's coming to TriMet. TriMet's service is improving. The number of buses are going to continue to expand over the next couple of years. There are plenty of good parts of this package, but part of it also included money for this freeway expansion and some other ones around the region.
Is there any money for bus rapid transit? Because a lot of places, it doesn't necessitate like light rail, but at the same time, like the buses need their own dedicated lane to get through.
So that's an excellent question, because we're at this current point where we have 11 years to solve climate change.
Yeah.
And all of our transportation and all of our carbon emission audits that the state has done has said we found ways to decarbonize our energy and all of these other things. But if Oregon's going to decarbonize, we have to figure out how to change our relationship to the automobile. Because even if every single car is electric, even if we could flip a switch and make that happen tomorrow, we still wouldn't be able to produce the amount of energy that requires. So bus rapid transit is an enormously cost-effective thing. If you were to just take a lane off of Powell between, you know, Southeast Portland and outer Southeast, like out into Lentz, and just made it so that only exclusive for buses, and it would run a bus every 5 minutes, in the grand scheme of investments, that's very cheap. You know, the cost of this Rose Quarter Freeway could provide free transit at existing rates of TriMet service for over 4 years. TriMet makes $120 million a year on farebox revenue. So for $480 million, you could get 4 years of existing rates of service for free. Now, there's legal colors of money arguments about you can't just take that money and do that. But I'm trying to articulate the extent to which the bus rapid transit investments, Heather, that you're talking about, These are much more cost-effective things that mean that low-income folks, especially those that are unable to drive or unwilling to drive because of age, citizenship, whatever ability, whatever reason, we can provide mobility options that are actually better for public health, that are better for the climate, and better for just Portland's economic prosperity. But there's such a desire. There's a freeway industrial complex that's eager for this $500 million investment.
Yeah. The environmental study for the project is currently in draft form for people to comment on. Is there any worrying aspect of the project environmentally that you've seen?
Can you clarify? You're just...
Oh, like usually in EIRs, you'll have like projected CO2 emissions and projected like outcomes for different stakeholders in the area. Have you had a chance to see that report yet?
So it will come out on Valentine's Day.
Oh, okay.
Oregon's birthday, February 14th. And we originally asked for an extension. So as part of this project, they have to do a 30-day environmental assessment. We would have asked them to do an environmental impact statement, but they did not. Environmental impact statement is longer and more thorough. ODOT's clearly just trying to just get this thing over with as fast as possible. We asked for an extension of 2 months. They gave us an extra 2 weeks, so we're calling that a victory. We'll have 45 days to get as many comments as we can on the record. We will have more of an idea about what ODOT is saying that this project will have in terms of carbon emissions and in terms of air quality. We haven't discussed it yet, but this project literally involves an expansion of the freeway into the backyard of Harriet Tubman Middle School, I mean, which demographically and historically has undergone a lot of problems with urban renewal and freeway expansion.
Well, it's also a major, like, EJ issue, it's or environmental
massive,
justice, I'm sorry.
It's a massive environmental justice issue, and currently the air quality at Harriet Tubman, Portland Public Schools had to spend millions of dollars to add all these filters so indoor it's clean. But students, air quality researchers are saying that students shouldn't have outdoor recess currently at Tubman. Like that is,
wow.
And they're talking about literally expanding the freeway into that backyard.
Wow. If people want to get involved with No More Freeways PDX, how would they do that?
This is the most opportune time to get involved with No More Freeways PDX. So if you go to our website, www.nomorefreewayspdx.com, there's a tab where you can click sign up. This is an entirely citizen-run, rabble-rousing thing, so we're not going to spam you too much. like, we just don't have the capacity to do so. But from February 14th through April 1st, we will be really organizing and encouraging folks to get their comments on the record about air quality, about environmental justice, about doing something about climate change, and also just this, you know, we haven't mentioned this much in this either, but there isn't a single city anywhere in North America that has solved traffic congestion by expanding a freeway. I'll say that one more time.
Yeah.
Not a single city anywhere in North America that has solved traffic congestion. So if you're out there listening to this right now, stuck in traffic and being like, what is this crazy hippie talking about? Although it's KBOO, so hopefully you're, you know, I self-identify as such. But empirically, decades of urban planning research have suggested that every single lane of freeway that you add, all that you were doing is making it easier for more people to drive. And even if you're someone that loves driving, and I certainly do, especially outside of the Portland region, I love going on road trips. But it's not fun to drive in the city when there's tons of traffic and you're worried about hitting somebody and things are uncomfortable. Making it so that more people can have other alternatives, that is the way to move forward with our mobility goals here in Portland.
Yeah, I love my Kia Soul. I love driving my Kia Soul, but not in the city. Like, I go on my bike or I do Max, and the people that are car bound all the time, I've got to have space. You know,
right.
it's insane. So for the dates that are coming up, there's like a public comment period. What day was that? Because I just lost it on the website. Oh, it's March 12th. It's going to be at the Portland Convention Center.
Yes. Just right around the corner from here at the Oregon Convention Center. If you sign up for updates from us, www.nomorefreewayspdx.com.
Uh-huh.
We're also on Twitter, twitter.com/nomorefreeways. We will be definitely organizing a bit of an event, and we would love for anyone that's interested to come check us out.
Awesome. We're going to have you back when that date comes closer to us, just to remind listeners that they can have their voice heard about this project. This is one of those money sinks where you have an opportunity cost, right? So you can spend that money pretty much anywhere you want, and you're going to use it by expanding lanes, and the LA area just did that into the valley, and it hasn't helped one bit at all.
Los Angeles spent $1.4 billion widening the 405 pass, and traffic commutes on average got 1 minute worse.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. So Aaron Brown from No More Freeways PDX has been my guest. When we come back, we're going to be talking with houseless people and how are they surviving the cold. Thank you.
let's sing one for Frying Pan Jack, who's alive, and the oldest of the old out there in Albany, Oregon. Frying Pan Jack settled out off of the train, the Great Tramp. He got scared. He always told me if I get afraid to walk into a railroad yard, a makeup yard, it would be time to quit. He used to carry a spike ball handle in his vindle, his bedroll, balloon, he called it, to fend off the ne'er-do-wells. But, you know, the way it's gotten to be on the skids now, young, mean drunks and drug money. And so they prey off the old poor down under the railroad bridges. And so they tend to settle out and stay in one place where they feel safe. You see, he feels safe in this bar over in Albany, Oregon. If you want to find Frying Pan Jack, that's where you look for him. We shared a camp down there in Oroville at the foot of the Feather River Canyon coming out of Keddie on the Western Pacific. Keddie, up at the top of the canyon, still has a wooden water tower. It's never been torn down, and you can camp under it. Anybody ever been there up in the High Sierra? Well, it's beautiful. Jack and I were in that camp. That's where he said to me, you know, he'd been tramping since 1927. He said, I told myself in 27, if I cannot dictate the conditions of my labor, I will henceforth cease to work. You don't have to go to college to figure these things out. No, sir. He said, I learned when I was young that the only true life I have is the life of my brain. But if it's true the only real life I have is the life of my brain, what sense does it make to hand that brain to somebody for 8 hours a day for their particular use on the presumption that at the end of the day they will give it back in an unmutilated condition? Fat chance. So he built that big Montana bedroll, started piping the stem, panhandling, you know. Head full of words and songs. He didn't write songs and poems. He found them and scattered them abroad for people like me to find and put to work again. He was old enough to remember the sway rods under the boxcars, riding the rods. Fry Pan Jack, the two bums. The bum on the rods is hunted down as an enemy of mankind. The other is driven around to his club as fetid, wined, and dined. And they who curse the bum on the rods as the essence of all that's bad will greet the other with a winning smile and extend the hand so glad. The bum on the rods is a social flea who gets an occasional bite. The bum on the plush is a social leech, blood-sucking day and night. The bum on the rods is a load so light that his weight we scarcely feel, but it takes the labor of dozens of folks to furnish the other a meal. As long as we sanction the bum on the plush, the other will always be there. But rid ourselves of the bum on the plush and the other will disappear. Then make an intelligent, organized kick. Get rid of the wasted crush. Don't worry about the bum on the rods. Get rid of the bum on the plush.
The Heather McCoy Show.
The city of Portland is thought of as a progressive mecca in popular media, but if you spend any time downtown or driving the freeways, you'll notice that there's tents and homeless people scattered throughout Portland and the metropolitan area. This week, the temperatures will reach lows around the 20s at night and in the 40s in the day. Under the criteria set forth by Multnomah County, emergency warming shelters will open when temperatures are forecast at 25 or below. Forecasts predict at least an inch of snow in most areas, or if overnight temperatures are forecast at 32 below with inch of driving rain or other conditions including severe wind chills or extreme temperature fluctuations. I'm going to hit the streets of Portland to see if these accommodations are enough to serve the homeless population and to see if there's any barriers to get these services. Okay, so we're standing with Brent, and he's houseless. And how hard is it to stay warm in this cold weather?
It's as hard as finding a warm jacket sometimes, because sometimes the cold weather comes out of nowhere, and you have to find a jacket or something, or even like a bunch of plastic to sleep in, or even dive into a dumpster to sleep in.
When you dive into a dumpster, have you ever had a risk of getting into a trash truck and then getting compacted?
One guy started, I felt somebody wheeling it, and I immediately hopped out. He said that once it goes over, you go in there, he says, that's it. Nobody could hear anything.
Yeah, that would be a hard thing to come back from. So are you able to access some of the emergency shelters that have been opening because of the extreme cold at 25 degrees at night?
It's not as bad as it was a year or two ago when there was snow everywhere for 2 months. They opened up the Portland building.
Okay. So you're staying moderately warm even in these cold temperatures?
If they hadn't opened the Portland building a year or two ago, I would have been dead.
Yeah. What is the Portland building for those that may not know?
I don't know. It's a city building. It's city planning type stuff.
Okay. Where do you find your jackets? Is there a charity that hands them out? Or
you just find them everywhere. People throw stuff down. People sleep. They get up. They go. They throw their clothes down and blanket. And then other people, they want to go to sleep. And it's like almost like they're trading off. Because sometimes I leave stuff. Like I leave blankets and jackets. Because it's just, I'm too hot.
Yeah. So have you been trying to find a shelter in these really cold conditions? Or are you just okay with the street and you don't want to deal with the rules that the shelter puts forth?
I've gotten good at finding things to survive, to use for survival. Like large, like I'll grab a bunch of trash bags and crawl into them. It's almost like, what is it? It's the same as a sleeping bag. You could crawl into them wet, and you'll live through, like, I don't know. Normally you die probably from exposure, but when you're wet. But I mean, if you crawl into a couple trash bags, you could sleep all night.
Do you have any hope of finding a permanent shelter, or how long have you been out here?
I've been out here for 5 or 6 years, but I've heard that Mayor Ted Wheeler, he's been putting up a lot of low income buildings, like apartments, only cost a third of your income. I think I'm probably gonna end up moving into one of those.
Yeah, I hope you do.
Nice.
Yeah. So how did you become homeless?
I wasn't able to work, and I got on SSI, disability.
Okay.
Psychological disability.
Yeah. Is there anything that we didn't cover that you want KV listeners to know?
I would go, if there are anybody's ever cold or anything, I'd just go to the mission and ask them questions. Where can I go? I need a jacket. I'm scared.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Thank you for your time, and stay safe and stay warm.
Okay. Thank you.
So I'm standing still outside of the Portland Rescue Mission, and I'm with Christopher. So how have you been finding a warm place to sleep while it's 24 degrees or so outside?
I came to the startling discovery after getting out of the hospital and waking up at midnight that Portland Rescue Mission was full, TPI was full, Union Gospel was full, and all the shelters were full. And I was stuck outside all night, freezing, because I had no blankets. They give out select few blankets at freaking Portland Rescue Mission, and nowhere else gives out blankets except Portland Rescue Mission. They only do that until 9:30, and they don't have that many blankets to begin with, so they say.
Has Portland Rescue Mission been able to contact the people that, or tell the people that aren't able to get beds where to find temporary shelter? Because when it gets below 25 degrees, they're supposed to actually provide emergency shelter from the cold. Have you been provided with that information at all?
The Portland Rescue Mission just mentioned Union Gospel and TPI and City Team, and those are the only four places that they actually list, and nowhere else. So City Team bills first, and in order to get a bed there, you have to have $5 cash. Because if you don't have $5, then you got to go to the very end of the line, and it goes vouchers first, then cash, then the ones without either or. And so you get stuck outside, and then if you come from over there to here, by the time you get over here, Portland Rescue Mission claims that the fire marshal has put a ban on how many they can have, and that they're only allowed to have 65, and they only take people with TV cards, and then anybody that doesn't have TV cards has to go to the end of the line. Union Gospel and TPI are only shelters during emergency extreme weathers, and at the rest of the year, they're not open for any other shelter.
So it's really cold right now. We're standing outside. I've got gloves on. I'm bundled up. I'm freezing. You're freezing. How do you stay warm when there are no shelters giving beds or room? Is there libraries, or how do you deal with this?
The libraries are open set amount of times, but they're open 7 days a week. And on Sunday, it's the only day they're closed really early, and that's 4 o'clock. I usually hang out at the library. When it's cold like this, I can't can because of my neuropathy and all my disabilities. And that's a whole other story. But other than that, there's not really many places. TPI, when it's not an emergency shelter, is a day shelter. But you can't, like, lay down if you're not feeling well. You have to sit up in a chair. And it's the same thing with Portland Rescue Mission. They kick you out at certain times of the day. A lot of times of the day. Like at midnight, if you're sitting in there getting warm and it's cold outside, they'll only let you sit in there for 15 minutes and they kick you out and make you stay out for an hour.
So we're on Burnside Street right now, and I've seen a number of tents. Have you ever had a tent? And if so, have you had them confiscated? Because I have seen a lot of tents being cleaned up by the city.
Yes, I have. As a matter of fact, I've had them not only taken by the authorities, but I've had them taken by criminals that are stealing from other houses that are in the same boat. It's a really rough life out here on the streets. People are getting stabbed every which way but loose over stupid things. They're setting up these things called stings, and they wait until a bunch of people get orchestrated together and get situated, and then they come in and raid them every 3 to 6 months and take all their stuff and throw it in impound, and then it gets thrown out into the garbage or it gets sent to donations. And you have to have ID and all that to get your stuff back. And a lot of people are having a struggle with their ID because they took this $2 billion that was donated to help the things that are going on here. The city kept it for themselves.
Do you know how that money was dispersed other than they kept it for themselves?
I believe, I don't have 100% sure on this, so don't quote me, but 50% of me is sure enough that it got dispersed between their employees.
And then how long have you been out in the cold like this?
I've been out in this cold off and on for 34 years, and this last time around, 5 years consecutive.
Do you have any way of accessing like a permanent shelter, like Housing First program?
My history is a really tough one because I'm related to so many families by blood, marriage, and adoption that they're intentionally keeping my income from me and keeping me from a roof that I have to go to another state I'm not born and raised in to live and have a roof and an income. So my situation's a lot worse than a lot of others, but in the same way, it's not, because overseas, they're freaking held in captivity and they get hardly anything, and they're in worse extreme weathers. And there's women that are being prostituted and all of that. But in this very state right here, it says it's the greatest place to live. They have all these houseless shelters because it's a trap. They target the middle class and the low middle class and below. And it's all about population control. If you even raise your voice to your kid to reprimand them, you got CPS on your ass, because there's ones out there that have nothing better to do but to find trouble. And if you raise your voice here in the state of Oregon to your child in any way that is an aggressive or hostile manner, they will take your kids from you and put them in the system.
How often, if you have a percentage of the year, how often do you get a bed during the year, like 50% or less than that?
Less than that. And a lot of that's by choice because they don't do proper screenings and stuff. And a lot of these shelters that you stay at have bed bugs and body lice and stuff, because the ones that come in here don't have no care or anything. All they're concerned with is getting their drugs and leaving their needles everywhere. I cannot tell you how many times I've almost lost my fingers to picking up dirty needles that are loaded with heroin and whatever else they put in them, and leaving them on kids' playgrounds with no cap on them or behind a dumpster. They have no respect, no integrity, no honor, none of that. Us old school, most of them are gone because there was no green light issued. My people kept coming to the one that was responsible for giving the green light, and he refused to give the green light.
Have you had any run-ins with the cops at all in your 34 years on the streets?
Oh, I've had many bloodbaths with cops in this town. They're very corrupt and very crooked, and they are very organized. cops everywhere, really, but mainly in this town, it's really bad. They tell you this whole grand scheme of things and show you how beautiful Portland is to lure you in here so that they can get you trapped in here and turn you into an income that bits their pocket.
Is there anything you want to leave KV listeners with that we haven't heard yet?
Yeah. Take off those beer goggles that you wear and all the things that are keeping you from seeing the real world and open your eyes as to what's really going on. The federal government ignores